Welcome to the Super Gamer Podcast. Welcome to the new Super Gamer Podcast, episode 180. Our guests this week, both of them, we have two guests, and both are TTRPG designers, they're streamers, they're safety consultants, and they are the co-curators of the TTRPG, that's tabletop role-playing game, Safety Toolkit. We have Kiana Shaw and Lauren Bryant Monk. Thank you for being here.
Hello, thank you for having us.
Yeah, so actually we'll just start if I can get Kiana, if you can say hi.
Hi.
And Lauren, if you could say hi.
Hello.
So now we have voices.
This happens a lot. We just go together now. Yeah. Unintentionally.
So the main reason we're here is to talk about the TTRPG Safety Toolkit, which, you know, as curating would suggest, is not necessarily something you two have written yourselves, but it's various safety rules or formats that you find are quite helpful and have put into this toolkit that people can kind of pick and choose or use whatever works for their group when they're playing a TTRPG. And it has things like lines and veils, and the X card, the N card, the O card, Lux and Technique, and all that. Basically, various versions of a soft no and a hard no, or yes, I like this, I'm uncomfortable with this, and various ways to let other players know that you are or aren't comfortable with something.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, essentially, we position ourselves as people who are curating. So we're pulling together resources, and our goal is not to claim credit or anything like that, but it's simply to centralize all these amazing resources that are out there. And this was born out of, you know, back when we were more deeply involved in the actual play community. Oh God, this was like 5 years ago, Lauren, or something like that. And we were involved in some communities which introduced us to safety tools. And we've been playing games before that. And personally for myself, I was like, oh, why had I never heard of these tools before? Because these are super helpful and would have been very helpful for me, especially in some of my earlier games. I dealt with, you know, strangers using sexual violence against my character and stuff like that that I wasn't comfortable with, but I had no language or really power or tools to talk about those things and to feel like I could come to the table and be like, hey, I'm not comfortable with this, can we change? And so when I was introduced to safety tools through these actual play communities, I was like, oh man, why didn't I know about these before? And I realized as I was digging, it's like, oh well, because so many of these have been lost to the depths of the internet. You know, we have all experienced the deaths of forums and like, you know, blogs, and they just kind of get lost. So some people will know them, but a lot of people won't, and they don't know where to go find that information. And so I was like, wouldn't it be cool if there was like one central location to go find these things? And so that's kind of where the toolkit started. And so, yeah, so it's been kind of a work in progress, constantly a living resource that we are updating as, you know, new information or translations come up and people volunteer to add in their tools into the kit to make it bigger and better.
Cool, yeah. So I'm very lucky to play Dungeons & Dragons is basically all I play as far as TTRPGs, but I've played with the same close friends for like 20 years. And I don't think there'd ever be a problem. You really kind of answered this already, but I don't think there'd be much of a problem for one of us to just straight up say like, hey, I'm not cool with that. And we'd be like, okay, but what's the use? Why do we want to like have these formalized rules? Why do we want to have like X card, you know, instead of just, hey, I don't like that.
I think there are a lot of different reasons why something that like a formalized tool might be useful. There are some people who may not feel comfortable just sort of speaking out and saying, hey, I'm okay with this, I'm not okay with this. And so having a script can be really helpful for people, like sort of like having another game rule to say, hey, this isn't okay. And also, one of the things that I found is that even in really established groups is that sometimes, you know, we say we're going to use the X card, or we say we're going to use something, and then someone will just go, hey, okay, I'm not okay with this. And we treat it like it's an X card, you know, or we treat it like it's or something, you know, really intense is happening, and someone goes, oh, hey, are you okay? Like, this is getting really intense. And the other person goes, yeah, I am. I'm having a great time. That is the same thing as having an O card, but by introducing to them as tools first, it sort of opens up the discussion around that sort of stuff, and sort of signals that it's okay to speak about whether or not you're okay or not okay with something, especially in something like a D&D, where you're sort of used to a GM saying this is what happens. A lot of times players won't necessarily feel okay, you know, fighting back against the GM to say, no, I don't want that to happen. And it's not just because, you know, I want to win, or I want to, like, there's something that I fundamentally don't enjoy about this, and it will affect the rest of the way that I'm playing. And so it's, I think having formalized tools are a great way to start that conversation.
Yeah. And additionally, often where safety tools are being used are in places where there are some heightened emotions, people feeling vulnerable, or people could potentially feel like this could be attacked, like an attack on what they're doing. And essentially, it's by formalizing this in some way, you're providing a process that everyone has already previously agreed on. And so you're not having to really think about, okay, how do we approach this conversation? You already know. You can just refer to what is the process that is being described to you via the tool. I like to connect this to things like, you know, in a soccer game, for example, we have processes in place if somebody is injured on the field, right? If someone gets injured, the ref calls, blows the whistle, pulls out a card. Everyone knows exactly what that means, and they can therefore go through the process of taking the player off the field, making sure that they're okay, changing anything that needs to be changed. And it's the same deal, right? It's just an agreed upon structure to those pretty uncomfortable conversations. And honestly, this is, we say that, you know, people are informally basically using these tools when they're having these, you know, just casual conversations with their friends in the moment. But these tools are actually also super useful for well-established groups, just because it's very hard sometimes to break a status quo, even for people that you are comfortable with and trust. Especially for games, you can get really into the moment and get like really into the flow, and you can feel like if you're saying, hey, I'm not cool with this, that you're interrupting that and, you know, potentially breaking the fun for everyone else. Or, you know, there's this ability to feel like you can't place yourself in that position, even with people that you do know. And so I have found it useful to have these tools, especially because it also prompts the thinking about safety and care in spaces where you don't necessarily think about that. A great example would be, you know, people have changing boundaries, and things that they're comfortable with and not comfortable with will change over time. So for example, you know, I know many people in my life who have become parents, and they therefore then can no longer have harm towards children or child endangerment in their games. Because that hits way too close to home now that they have their own kid. And while that is something that can be brought up, you know, with their friends of like, hey, so like, can we like make sure we don't do this anymore? Safety tools like line veils or other, you know, pre-play things help you prompt that thinking so that you're already thinking ahead of time, because these are things that can just totally fly over your head. Things that you don't even think about as being a possibility of change for people. And so these are just, again, these are all just ways to help facilitate those sometimes really awkward, sometimes very vulnerable conversations, and just make them easier for everybody, and therefore make good gaming experiences easier for everybody.
So as far as, you know, even with established friends, not wanting to, like, be the odd one out or break up the flow or whatever, I certainly see how online, which, you know, a lot of us do at this point, we currently, our campaign is online. I certainly see how, you know, you get the anonymity. I can privately message the GM and go X card or I'm not into it or whatever. Is there any way sort of around that or like, what do you do in person? Because if you're the kind of person who's shy about that, you know, even holding up a card or pointing at a card, like you're showing I'm the one doing this. Is there a way around that?
One of the things that I highly encourage is for the GMs or anyone who's in that kind of position of power, in a sense, to demonstrate that and to use it themselves and break that kind of open for people. When I'm running games, that is something I will do. When I set out the X card, I will, even just flippantly, like I will kind of be like, we're in the beginning of the session, I name an NPC after an X of mine, and I go, I'm going to X card that, actually. I would prefer that this NPC is not named after someone that I know. And just demonstrating that the ease of the use of that. Obviously, there are these digital, I have seen people use, even in in-person games, have their phones or whatever, that they can message, people with. But otherwise, I mean, the major part of it is really just making sure that the table is creating a space that is of a culture of care, which is a major tenet of what we do, where, like, ultimately the tools only go so far if the people at the table don't care about each other, right? You want the ability to be able to use these tools and to make a safer space in the games you're playing is dependent on the ability to deprioritize the game over the well-being of the people that you're playing with and recognizing that these are people have their fears, their worries, their concerns, their boundaries, and respecting that. And so it's kind of a twofold thing, right? There's the idea of making everyone have to contribute to make that the environment that is happening. And at the same time, therefore, everyone has to kind of buy into the system. And so making it less of a big deal. Because ultimately, safety tools shouldn't be the big deal, right? They're obviously used for high stakes emotional moments. For example, completely crossing a boundary and accidentally triggering some form of PTSD response. But they can also, again, be used, like I said, to just be like, actually, can we just like retcon that and do something different? For example, I would not super love it if I was playing a game and there was a very important NPC that had the same name as my ex that I don't get along with, right? So things that are that small, and the more you use it for those lower stakes things, the less it feels like it's an interrupting thing. And the less it feels like it's for a shy person, it's the worst thing that could happen in this moment because I'm drawing attention to myself. Because it's just like any other mechanic in the game. You're just using it. You're just using that to continue play.
Yeah. The other thing that I definitely encourage along with or as part of developing a culture of care is to make sure that you are looking at other players and checking in on them, checking in on their body language, because a lot of times if somebody feels uncomfortable with speaking out, you'll be able to, especially if it's somebody you know very well, you'll be able to like sort of see that on their face. And that's where or in their body language. And that's a moment that you can sort of check in with everybody, you know, like not necessarily singling a person out. It's also if, you know, something where you're, you know, GMing or facilitating and you have the ability to be like, okay, we're going to take a break now. Those breaks are a really good time, you know, in person to sort of one-on-one check in with somebody, see if they're okay, have a conversation that isn't with the whole table. And then if you do need to change something, I am really a big fan of retconning in safety in safe play is to say, okay, so we said this happened, but actually we're going to go back and this is going to happen instead. Just to sort of, yeah, once again, prioritize the feelings of the players over the narrative in the game.
So this kind of leads to the Luxton technique, which we'll get to right away. But I also want to mention, as far as the culture of care, while reading about the toolkit here, one of the things that popped into my head was like, whether or not I personally would feel the need to use, you know, the card system or whatnot, to me, it's such a good, like, if someone in the group was immediately like turned off by like, oh, you're doing these safety rules, like I'm out, I'd be like, great, that's a red flag and I don't want to play with you. So that's one nice thing.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about safety tools is that they are, it's another form of sort of social contract, right? And we do this already when we're making up games. We decide, you know, okay, we're going to play a D&D game and it's going to be, you know, Curse of Strahd. And if somebody's like really not okay with vampires, then they can either say, hey, I'm really not okay with vampires, can we do like some other, you know, like, I don't know, what's another book, like Tomb of the Giants or whatever instead. Or they can say, hey, I'm really not into vampires, I don't think this game is for me. And you can do the same sort of thing with safety tools where somebody, you know, to get into the Luxton technique, if someone says, okay, we're playing, we're going to use the X card, someone could say, hey, I'm really not into the X card, can we use one of the alternative methods like the Luxton technique? Or if the person is just like, maybe not a generous player and they're like super against the idea of safety tools and they're like name calling you for using safety tools, then you sort of go, okay, that game isn't for like, this game isn't for you, or that game isn't for me. Being able to set the boundaries around the play experience is something that we already do, and tools just help us refine that a little bit more.
Right. So the Luxton technique for listeners is it's sort of like the X card, but the X card, I guess, is a hard stop. It's like, I don't want this. And then I guess it sort of allows the GM to just go, okay, as you say, we'll retcon that. That didn't happen. But that may not be the right response for someone either. So the Luxton technique is more of, okay, how would you handle this? What do you say happened? Am I getting that right?
Yeah, it's presented in the essay by PH Lee as an alternative to the X card. And the idea is that for PH Lee, using the X card and saying this never happened is actually worse than having something traumatic happen for them, because it just makes the situation worse by pretending it never happened. So the Luxton technique is used for whoever is not okay with what's going on in the situation, to then have the narrative control to figure out exactly what needs to happen so they can sort of move on from this situation. So instead of saying, you know, this never happened, it's saying, okay, it happens, but this is how it happens. In a way that allows them to sort of get what they need out of the situation. Kiana, did I is that basically a good?
No, that's basically it. Is that sometimes so people have different responses to the things that are traumatic or close to trauma for them, and the recognition is that different people will have different needs on how to approach those subjects. For some people, it's saying that it doesn't exist at all. Or retconning. For some people, it's giving them the control to guide how this will go forward. And both are valid. And so that's kind of also one of the important parts about the toolkit, is the ability to give people choice and options, because you can't use just like a real like toolkit for home renovation stuff. You can't use a hammer on a screw, right? use the right tools for your needs and for the needs of the people and your projects and everything that's going on. So it's the same idea. And so the more options that are available, the more ability for people to pick and choose what works for them. And some of that will require conversation because some people may have conflicting needs. And ultimately, you just have to find a way to compromise on those things and make sure that people are all on the same page about how that all works out. It's not enough for people to be like, here's the toolkit. We're good now. it's just the starter of, again, this fostering this culture of care, having those difficult conversations. It is just a way to help support all of that.
So you've done a panel before called Beyond the X Card. And the reason I bring this up, luckily we've already talked about at least the Luxton technique, but I realized as I was writing questions and researching here that I was just defaulting to the X card as an example. Do you think people, like, new to the toolkit, do they hyper-focus on the X card, and is that a problem?
I think people who are brand new to the idea of safety don't necessarily gravitate towards the X card, but the X card was one of the first popularized widespread tools, I would want to say, at least in a recent time, just because, again, the work in safety has been going on for several decades. Lauren and I just happen to be the people who put stuff together. Now, people have been making these tools for forever. And the X card just happened to be a very prolific one, which got picked up by a lot of games. And I do like the X card. The X card works for me. But I have advocated for, you know, making sure that people understand there are other options out there. And also for game designers and stuff to actually think about what safety looks like in their games and not just, again, be like, well, we slap the X card into our text and say, you can use this thing and that's it. That's our job is done. We that's the all we have to do. It's the idea is that we have existed at this kind of basic level of, hey, safety tools are good actually, and we've hit that. I think we have hit that in the zeitgeist of our industry. I think we mostly agree safety tools are good. Safety in games is good. And for that panel and in kind of our work going forward from there, we have been very focused in on, okay, so what else is there that's not just here, just include a tool or just reference to a tool that has existed. We need to expand out from there to talk about, can you make a specific tool that works for your game that is unique to the game and helps fold in those conversations and that process of safety into the game mechanics itself, so you're not just having this external thing. Are there other ways that people can approach setting these boundaries and looking at these conversations? Can we push the conversation and popular thinking past just the X card? I still think that's important work, and that is the work that Lauren and I have been doing mostly these days.
Yeah.
I've been working with game designers to be like, let's create an actual bespoke custom safety tool that works specifically for your game, and that just blends all that together.
Right. The two of you have done a lot of game safety work together on Die, the role-playing game, Starforge, mm-hmm. playroll.com. And yet, is this true? When you play TTRPGs together, you always make characters that hate each other.
It is true. I don't know what happened. We finally did one home game where we have characters that like each other.
We're like best friends.
Finally. But yes, we spent a good like 3-4 years only playing characters that, to be fair, I was usually invited in as a guest villain.
Yes.
So we just happened to be constantly at odds with each other despite being very close friends IRL.
Yeah, a lot of it came from, you know, our time in actual play and, you know, having these sort of like set weekly casts and wanting to have a guest sort of pop in and do something, you know, shake things up. And the easiest way to do that is to sort of have them be a little bit shady or be a villain. And, you know, even though Kiana and I are and have always been very good friends, we weren't often like in a cast together. We didn't often get to play a lot of games together. And so our first experiences of playing together was usually like one of us was guesting in and there was an antagonistic sort of situation. But I think maybe not to like read too much into it, but I think it maybe helped us and our understanding of like using safety tools and a culture of care, because, you know, I always knew that like if Kiana and I were like fighting in game or saying really cruel stuff to each other in game, that it was never personal.
Yeah, basically. I mean, like I came in several times. I was like, haha, I'm here to mess up your shit. And so, you know, and you would often be playing the very good person. And so I'd just be like, haha, I'm here to mess with you. And you know, having the tools and all that stuff has made those fun experiences that wasn't great. And also gives us some practice as to what these look like in play, right? What those situations actually look and feel like, and what they should look and feel like in terms of like everyone's still having a fun time, and not, you know, some people are having a fun time and some people aren't.
What about Kiana? You play percussion and you've been quite involved with theater. Lauren, you're an opera singer. Are you two always some form of a bard?
Very often that is my default.
I know, actually. I think, so I started playing D&D like around the time like the first season of Critical Role was happening. And so unfortunately I found a lot of like founded myself, like, I don't know if anybody actually said this to me, but there were a lot of like high expectations of bardness and cutting words, the D&D spell. I just don't like coming up with insults. I'm a very squishy person, and bards, especially in D&D, have this like stereotype of being kind of shady. So I often like to play. I love a cleric. I love a rogue. But less bard, just because I felt like I expected things of my, you know, like I expected a lot of performance of myself that I don't know if I was ready to like come up. I wasn't going to start singing opera at the table all the time.
Yeah. And meanwhile, my very first D&D character was a bard, was an overly romantic bard who played the triangle, because that's the kind of person I am. I have played many different other characters, but bard is certainly one that I go, I just need an easy character. I know I will just be dramatic.
Yeah,
that's where I am.
I'm trying to think. I don't know if I've ever actually played a bard, and I think the reason would be like, I don't need a reason to hog the spotlight. Like I think my friends would be like, oh no. But in Baldur's Gate, that is, you know, I'm playing by myself. I went straight for the bard.
Playing bard in Baldur's Gate 3 is so good.
Yeah.
I really
enjoyed it. You get a lot of very fun options as a bard to be like, hello, I'm just going to talk my way out of this situation.
Yeah, I defaulted to Ranger in Baldur's Gate because that is actually one of the character types that I default to the most. That's another side of me, is the outdoor kid. And so I immediately went into being a Ranger. So I'm not great at talking to people in the game as much as I try, but I do talk to all of the animals, and I'm great at talking to the animals. So I think I still got the good end of the stick in that game.
The animal, what's it called? I guess speaking to animals spell in Baldur's Gate is the best.
It is the best spell.
I've talked to so many
necessary
cats, and they all hate me.
No, I have it. I did a second. I have done two runs. One with a bard and one with a ranger. Actually, and I was like, I don't care what I'm playing. Anytime I play this game, I need to take speak with animals.
Oh yeah.
I do not care. I need to talk to all the animals. Just give me that option, please, and thank you.
It's so important.
It's so important. I love to talk to my doggy friend and my owlbear cub friend.
Oh,
and hopefully
that.
All these other friends I get to make.
Now I need to go get an owlbear on my next playthrough. Going back though, sorry. What you are curators, as we've mentioned. What's the criteria for something to be added to the toolkit? Like, it's a living resource, as you said.
Honestly, if people say that they want the thing to be in there, the original iteration of the toolkit, which is something I would do differently, was just me pulling things together.
It was like a lot of our own resources that we just sort of threw in, you know.
And I definitely would have approached that differently. Like, I would have all of these were open source, but I would have gone and talked to the people and been like, hey, just double checking that this is okay to put in here. That's something that I've learned throughout this process. And honestly, at this point, it's mostly just seeing if people want to add stuff to it. We've had people volunteer to put in things, and, you know, we just do a cursory read through and, you know, make sure there's no obviously bigoted content in it, which I highly doubt would ever happen, but like, just do a quick check. But other than that, again, we're not really picking.
Yeah, every so often I'll find something that I find very helpful. Somebody's will be like, hey, I made this safety tool, and I'll look at it and then think it's really great and sort of ask if they're okay with having it in, or if there's like a resource that I think is sort of missing. Lately I've been really interested in sort of the historical lineage of safety tools, and some of the stuff came, you know, like coming from LARP and ideas from LARP rights. And so sometimes I will go like looking for things, but for the most part, it is sort of, you know, if you've made a safety tool that you think is really useful and you want to like share it with the world, we'll just ask us. And that's how we got all of our translations also. We have many translations of the Quick Reference Guide, which is a document that Kiana has made sort of compiling everything together. And then also I've made a sort of Google Forms version of the Monte Cook Games Consent in Gaming checklist. And we've both had... We've had a lot of people approach us about translating them into a variety of different languages, and we are obviously extremely okay with that. And so we just, you know, let them go ahead, make sure everything is sort of properly attributed, and then we'll put it in the toolkit.
Yeah, it's been really cool to see like all these people volunteer their time and their knowledge into this resource to make it more accessible and approachable, which is kind of our whole goal, is to make these tools accessible and approachable. As you know, we have a Japanese translation that just recently came in, which was super
cool.
Think
that's the latest change.
Yeah, we have a Polish one and we have a Ukrainian one. There's a lot of really cool, and it kind of really shows how far-reaching the toolkit is, which still kind of boggles my mind sometimes.
And also the reach of the hobby, right? You know, like, I think it's very easy in the English-speaking world to sort of focus on, like, the American scene or the British scene, or, you know, and even in, you know, like in the American scene, you know, there's the East Coast games and the West Coast games and all these sort of stuff. But, you know, there are people who do not speak English who are using, you know, these sort of who are using the toolkit and using the quick reference guide to, you know, play their games that, you know, are you know, probably some games we've never heard of because we don't have access to them because we don't speak that language. And it's so it's really cool to see sort of the like universality of a desire for safety tools in gaming.
So before I ask the last thing here, and I promise we will not end on a down note here, but the lead up to it, I've heard you say before, and I think this is really predictable, some of the backlash to support tools like this is, you know, some people saying like, well, this is my story, I won't change my story, you know, like censorship, whatever, which I just want to say is nonsense, because GMs have to think on the fly all the time. Like in the campaign I'm currently in, our GM didn't expect us to chase after a green dragon, and now he has to come up with this whole new encounter. So like the idea that changing your story isn't a thing is total nonsense. But what I want to know, what kind of positive feedback have you gotten? What sort of reception have people been like, wow, this has really helped me?
I mean, I think a lot of it is not super tangible for us. For me, in terms of positive feedback, it has been just like people just be like, oh yeah, I use this. And I go, oh, you do? Great. you know, seeing it being included in games, included in actual plays and stuff, I think it's mostly just the like the widespread proliferation of it has been kind of the positive feedback for me. It's like, okay, this is great. Like it's being shared, it's being used. And that's what's important. I've had people come up and talk to me and be like, hey, the toolkit really changed how I approach games. Like it's made stuff more fun and like more exciting and more interesting and more helpful for me, which is always a great thing to hear. And obviously, we also did get awarded, right? The toolkit was awarded with a gold Emmy back in, God, 2020 now?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that was a really big moment in terms of recognizing where we were in terms of safety in the space, because again, when Lauren and I came in, people had known about these things, but not widespread, and it wasn't common. And I think the toolkit was one of the things that's really helped push that. Obviously, we are not the only things that pushed that into motion, but I think we did have a pretty pivotal moment in that, a pivotal role in that moment happening. So
a critical role, even.
Even a critical role. Yeah, so it's been very much, you know, I do think about all those people who have, you know, messaged us or, you know, replied to a tweet or anything, so talking about how it changed their games, and that means a lot, really.
Yeah. I was at a convention recently, and it was very wonderful to like talk to so many people who, you know, didn't know me but knew about the toolkit, and you know, I got to hear so many stories about how helpful it was and how much it had changed their games, especially, you know, if they had been playing for a really long time and had, you know, some less good experiences. I've, you know, there are a lot of academics who find our work of you know, of importance as part of, you know, sort of an academic understanding of gaming, which blows my mind a little bit. Because I think, you know, I think we knew that we were doing something cool, you know, and important when we made the resource, but it really did just come out of necessity for a moment. And I don't think either of us really expected it to go as far or be as important a part of our careers and lives as it ended up being. So yeah, I guess thank you to everybody who's ever told us that they enjoyed using the toolkit. Like, I'm really happy you found it to be very useful.
Listeners can find the toolkit at ttrpgsafetytoolkit.com. Kiana Shaw and Lauren Bryant-Monk, thank you for being here.
Thank you very much. And thanks for having us. This was a great conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much. This was fun.